And as far as baptisms go, tonight in this room at about 7 p.m., there'll be three more baptisms. So if you want to come and enjoy them, you probably, well, you might know Corey Miller is being baptized, Carl and Carol's son, and a couple other students. So 7 p.m., baptism's always exciting when someone wants to say, I want to tell people I want to follow Jesus. So that's happening tonight. And if not, that's cool. There's lots of stuff happening in the broader Journey Church that we don't know about. So God's working in spite of that. So question for you. Does anybody know who this is? Elon Musk. Some of you might know some of his products. If you use PayPal to transfer any money on the internet, he's the guy that is behind PayPal. The company SpaceX, if you've heard about them, we'll talk a little bit more about SpaceX in a minute. And probably his most well-known publicly, his public company is Tesla, the car company. But Elon Musk is a pretty brilliant guy. I read an article this week from Inc.com that talks a lot about Elon. And Elon believes that there are a lot of times when the question is harder than the answer. That if you can properly phrase the question, then the answer is the easy part. So that the question is harder to figure out. Asking the right question is harder to figure out than the answer itself. That if we get the right question, then the answer will be kind of apparent. His company SpaceX is a good example of this. Elon started his company, he didn't call it SpaceX then, but his question was, what is the barrier to colonizing Mars? So why are humans not living on Mars? What's the barrier to that? And so his answer that he thought was that food is the barrier, that we can't grow food on Mars. So he spent a couple $100,000, got some companies together to figure out how to build a greenhouse that would be able to grow food on Mars. Then he went to buy a rocket and realized, oh, I found the barrier to colonizing Mars. He found that his question was a little bit off base. The barrier that he found was, why are rockets not cost effective? A rocket, whenever he tried to buy his first rocket, a rocket cost about $3 million, and it was a single-use item. So it was kind of like a paper cup. Like, you use it, it goes, you go up into space, and then it's trash. And so Elon asked a second question. He said, why are rockets not cost effective? And he realized this is the question. And once he realized this is the question, that's what spurred his company, SpaceX. And SpaceX is marginally successful, but what they have been able to do is create a reusable rocket, which is making space travel much, much more affordable. So Elon would say that asking the right question is the solution instead of finding the answer to that question. Speaking of questions, did you know that in the New Testament of the Bible, there are 980 questions? 980 questions. That's 15% of the entire New Testament is a question. And that Jesus asked other people a little over 300 questions, about 307. Some people kind of disagree whether it was 307 or 305, but it depends on how you translate the Greek language. So Jesus asked other people 307 questions, and other people asked Jesus about 180 questions. Does anybody have a guess of how many of those 180 questions Jesus answered? So he was asked 180 questions. How many do you think he answered? Anybody know? How many do you think? 180. No, he didn't answer 180. Three, that's much closer. Jesus answered five. In the Bible, in the New Testament, when Jesus was asked 180 questions, he answered five of them. So he was 40 times more likely to respond by either not answering or answering with another question than to give a direct answer to the question. In Luke 23, whenever Jesus was being questioned by Herod, whenever King Herod was asking him about, are you really this traitor, this anti-government person, the Bible tells us that Jesus gave him no answer. Now, most of us have been raised believing that Christianity is about having the right answers. That whenever somebody says, do you believe in Jesus? You got to have the right answers. But I would say that it might be, or could it be, that being a good Christian means being able to wonder, being able to learn, being able to explore this mysterious God instead of having the right Sunday school answers. Is it possible that asking the right questions is what it means to follow Jesus? Now, I'm going to try something a little bit different in this series. because we're talking about questions, we are open to questions. So if you have questions during the service, raise your hand. If there's some word I used or something, that is welcome for this series. After this series, we'll try something else. We'll see how it goes. But good luck, Dale. He's teaching next week. Make sure you have some doozies for him. Now, we often study Jesus' miracles. We often study his parables, his birth, his death, his resurrection. But why don't we study his questions? I want to read you a couple of the questions that we see from Jesus. He says, "Who do you say that I am?" That's a question Jesus asked. Who do you say that I am? He asks, "Do you want to get well?" So whenever there was somebody that wanted to be healed, he said, "Well, do you want to get well?" I think that's kind of a fascinating question. He asks his disciples when they're on the boat in the storm, "Why are you afraid?" I know the feeling of being afraid. I mean, I've been afraid myself. But if somebody said, "Why are you afraid?" it kind of changes the way my brain thinks about the fear. It's like, well, why am I afraid? Jesus asks, "What do the scriptures say?" There was a young man that asked Jesus, like, how do I become a part of the kingdom of God? And Jesus said, well, what do the scriptures say? He answered with another question. Jesus asked, "Who touched me?" He was walking through a crowd of people, and there was a woman who was sick for 10 years and touched him, and he said, "Who touched me?" And I think that would have not only changed the way that woman was feeling, but even the people around him were like, "What? Who touched me? What kind of, like, why would you ask that question?" And then he asked, "Do you love me?" He asked his disciple Peter, "Do you love me?" Over the next 5 weeks, we'll be in this series called Quest. We'll be digging into the questions that Jesus asked, and possibly some of our own questions. And when you came in this morning, you got a piece of paper. It looks like this. And there's a bunch of questions. There's not 180 questions, because we thought that might be a little overwhelming. So we tried to distill it to about 25. And you got these questions. What I want you to do is I want you to take a minute, and I want you to pick three of them that you think it might be fun to learn about. So what we're going to do is this week, I know what I'm talking about. Next week, Dale knows what he's talking about. But then the following 3 weeks, we're going to be using this. So I want you to pick three that you think are interesting, and then number them, like, 1, 2, and 3, which you think you would like to hear more than the rest. So number 1, 2, and 3, your top three. So take a minute, and if you don't have one, raise your hand, and I will get you a copy. All right, so if you need more time, you can go ahead and continue that as I'm talking, but when the kids come around with the red buckets later, that's when we'll drop them in, so you've got some time yet. But last week we talked a bit about the time that Jesus got lost at the temple. That Jesus wasn't lost, he didn't think he was lost, but his parents thought he was lost. And if you remember the way that story goes, Jesus' family was going to Jerusalem for the Passover celebration, and they would have gone with a whole bunch of other people. And then whenever the Passover celebration was over, this big caravan of people would have headed back to Jesus' hometown, and his family was with that, and his parents thought he was there too, but because it was such a big group of friends and neighbors and cousins and whoever, they didn't realize that Jesus wasn't with them. My wife is realizing our son is not with us right now. If anybody knows where Evan is, let us know. Maybe he's at the temple. No, I have no idea where he is. he's back there, Matt says. I don't know. It fits really well, because Jesus was missing. I don't know, maybe he had to pee, I'm not sure. Where was I? That Jesus was missing. And his family started to go home, and they realized about 2 days after they left Jerusalem that Jesus wasn't there, and that Jesus was still in Jerusalem. So they went back to Jerusalem, and they found Jesus at the temple. And so I want to read part of this story for you. Luke chapter 2, I want to read verses 45 to 60. When they did not find him, this was while they were still walking home, when they didn't find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" Jesus asked. "Didn't you know that I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. So when they found Jesus, he was in the temple, and what was he doing? What was Jesus doing? He was talking, but what specifically? He was sitting, he was listening, and it says he was asking questions. So he was asking questions, supposedly to learn more information. And it said that the people that listened to what he had to say, his questioning and his listening, the people that were around him were kind of encouraged by Jesus. Now, Jesus even encourages us to do this, to ask questions. Let's read in Matthew chapter 18. I want to read a couple verses in Matthew. Matthew 18, 1 to 5. At this time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes a lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whomever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." So Jesus is encouraging his disciples to take the lowly position of a child to become great in the kingdom of God. Now I wonder what this means. What does it mean to take the position of a child? Does it mean that he wants us to take a position of humility, of submission, that there are people that are in charge of us? Is that what he means? I don't know. Does it mean that he wants us to laugh more? I don't know. Most of us have probably heard some statistic that like kids laugh 300 times a day and adults only laugh 10 times a day. I don't know if those statistics are real. I tried to find actual like studies and I couldn't. But I would say that kids in general laugh a lot. My kids find some stuff hilarious that I don't even understand. So kids laugh a lot. Is that what Jesus was saying? Or does he mean that we should ask more questions? A study done by a British firm, Littlewoods.com, found that children ask an inordinately large amount of questions. And their study showed that 4-year-old girls are the most likely to ask. I asked Selah how old she was. She's 4. The 4-year-old girls are the most likely to ask questions. They ask 390 questions in an average day. I see some. 390 questions in an average day means that there's a good chance that every minute and 50 seconds, she is asking a question. Little children ask lots of questions. This study also found that in children, 9-year-old boys are the least inquisitive. They ask about 144 questions per day, which is only one every 5 minutes. So children are inquisitive. So is this what Jesus is saying? That whenever we want to become like a child, we need to be inquisitive. I don't know if that's what he's saying, but I would like to run with that idea a bit this morning. So the next thing Jesus says is, whomever welcomes such a child welcomes me. So what does that mean? If we're supposed to welcome people who are like children, we're welcoming Jesus. Does he mean that we should welcome actual children? I think that, I would say probably yes, I don't know. But does he mean that we should welcome people that laugh a lot? Maybe. Does it mean that we should welcome people who ask a lot of questions? I like to kind of think about this, especially because we're in a series about asking questions. If we're supposed to welcome people who are like children, we should welcome people who ask lots of questions. And then he goes on to say that we shouldn't be a stumbling block to children, to people who are like children. And we one of the risks is that we can be a stumbling block, because when a question is asked, if someone is inquisitive, if someone is acting like a child and being inquisitive, we can either, when they ask a question, we can either shut them down by giving them like a definite answer, like ask a question, I will tell you the truth. And I find myself doing this as a parent more often than I should. If my kids ask a question, it's like, here's the right answer from your dad who is awesome, so listen to it. And that's a way to shut down an inquisitive nature. We can also shut them down by telling them that their question was dumb. I mean, like, if you say, like, why would you ask that question? Chances are they'll ask less questions. I see somebody giggling in the back. I don't know what that's about. Maybe somebody has done that before. That if we want to encourage questioning nature in people following Jesus, we need to value them. We can build people up. That's the other option when we ask questions. We can build them up by prodding their imagination, by saying, like, oh, interesting, like, tell me more, or what do you think about, or what if? We can continue to prod their imagination and encourage more discovery. I want to give you an example of this. I would like somebody to ask me a question, any question. Why do I wear the same shirt every week? That's a great question. So, I have a couple options when somebody asks me a question. Has anybody noticed I wear the same shirt every week? Anybody? Has anyone noticed? Ronnie noticed? A couple of the junior high boys, Ron noticed? Okay. I do wear the same shirt every week. And so, I have an option whenever I'm asked that question. I can say, like, none of your business. And that will shut it down. That will shut down the conversation. I could encourage their imagination. Why do you think, AJ, why do you think I wear the same shirt every day, every week? Because it's comfortable? Maybe. Anybody else have a thought? Why would I wear the same shirt every week? Because I have a closet full of the same shirt. Maybe. What were you going to say, Gene? Oh, go ahead. Because the only shirt I have? Maybe. Because I like to wear plaid like Dale? That's not the right answer. You don't have plaid on today. Anybody else? Go ahead, Selah. Because it's fluffy. It's comfy, maybe. Because I want people to notice. This kid has listened to me. Because at home, that's the right answer. Because at home, I started this self-study, and I find it fascinating somebody noticed, that I was like, I wonder how long it will take for someone to notice that I wear the same shirt every Sunday. It's been about 6 months, in case you're wondering. I have worn the same shirt every Sunday for 6 months. It's been washed a few times. I don't wash it, but it has been washed. Why do I not wash it? Woo, here we go. Why do I not wash it? What would make you ask that question? Okay. Maybe? Okay. Rolls. Not rolls like dinner rolls, but rolls like what we do. Go ahead, Evan. This whole question thing is... Because I wait till the collar is dirty. Man, this kid also pays attention. That's when it gets washed, when the collar starts to get a little yellow. He's smart. Whew, here we go. All right. So whenever we ask questions, and whenever we are asked questions... Now, you guys will notice when I wear this shirt again, I bet. That's a good question. Am I going to stop wearing the shirt now? Kendra would like that to happen. here we go. Whenever we're asked questions, we have the opportunity to either build people up, encourage imagination, or shut people down. Here at Journey, we talk a lot about being disciples who make disciples. That's our mission statement right now, being replicating Jesus, being disciples who make disciples. And being disciples... has a lot to do with how we respond to questions. If someone asks us about Jesus, we have the opportunity to build them up, to encourage imagination, or to shut them down. Discipleship and discipling is not just about answering questions, but it's also about asking the right questions. Whenever you think about kind of the one main question that Christians ask non-Christians, what is it? Have you met Jesus? Or some variation of that. Do you know Jesus? Have you met Jesus? Are you saved? Like, I've been asked this question on airplanes, at gas stations. Somebody will come up and usually hand me something and say, have you met Jesus? And I'm like, but that's an odd question. I don't know. And I know Jesus, and I can't answer this question. I think that being a disciple who makes disciples involves asking the right question. Because I don't know that the answer to do you know Jesus is binary, which means like there's not a yes or a no answer. It's not just two options. I think that there is more conversation to be had. And so I think being a disciple who makes disciples means asking good questions. The Greek philosopher Socrates, actually his way of teaching his students was so much full of questions that it became known in the Western world as the Socratic method. The Socratic teaching method is a method that mainly uses questions. And Socrates explained questions in two different ways. He explained good questions in two different ways. The first way is that a good question is like a horsefly. Has anyone been bitten by a horsefly? Okay. So it like stings. It's not like going to put you in the hospital sting like a bee can do. You'd be surprised. Rachel works in the ER. So maybe I'm wrong in this analogy. But like I've been stung by a horsefly, and it hurts. But it's not like a I'm going to die hurt. It's like a ow. Like I'm going to remember that fly for the next couple hours, and it's going to be annoying. Socrates would say that a good question won't leave you alone. It's like a horsefly. Like if a horsefly bites you, you remember that fly for at least a couple hours. A good question is one that's memorable, that maybe you wake up in the middle of the night and you're still kind of thinking about the question that was asked to you, because it's like it just kind of lingers. It invites imagination. Socrates would say that the other mark of a good question is that it brings new life, that it breathes some new idea, some new being, some new feeling into our being, that a good question brings about new life. Think about some of the best questions you've ever been asked. Do they meet these two descriptions, that they don't leave you alone and they bring new life? What are some of the biggest questions you guys have been asked? Will you marry me? That's a big question. That one won't leave you alone. It's been how many years? It won't leave you alone. I'm just joking. I like Brian. But what else? And it brings new life. That question brings a new relationship that is different and changing. What other big questions are we asked? Anybody have thoughts on that? Go ahead. Why do you connect to who you connect to? That's a question you've been asked. And it's like, why do I connect with the people I connect with? It makes you think. It makes you ponder, why am I attracted to these kinds of friendships? Yeah, that's cool. One of the questions in the Bible we talked about last week was when Jesus asked Peter in John 21, do you love me? Man, that is a question that won't leave you alone. Like, when Peter was asked, do you love me? In the Bible, it's written as though he answered immediately. We don't know whether he did or not. But I'm guessing throughout that evening, hanging out with Jesus, that he's like, I do. I'm pretty sure I do. Like, I think it's just one of those questions that just doesn't leave you alone. So if I asked you the question this morning, do you trust me? If Mark asked you directly, do you trust me? You don't necessarily need to answer that. But that's the kind of question that I want us to think about. Like, do you trust me? You might be thinking, like, well, what does Mark mean by trust? What does Mark mean by trust? Like, you might think, like, well, I think we're friends, but what does trust mean to Mark? Like, how does that, what if I say yes? What does that mean? Or what if I say no? Like, what will that do to our relationship? Like, do you trust me? Now, maybe you'd trust me with your bicycle, but not your car. Maybe you'd trust me to cook you dinner, but not to take care of your kids. I mean, I don't know. But asking this question, again, is not a yes or no answer. Like, it probably involves more conversation. It encourages discussion, which will probably deepen our relationship. If I asked you this and we actually talked about it, we would probably breathe new life into our friendship, into our relationship. Now, there is a risk to asking questions. One of the risks to asking questions is that we can use questions to avoid something deep. So, like, an example in the Bible is in John chapter 4, Jesus is at the well. He's thirsty. He asks this woman for a drink. She's a Samaritan. He's a Jew. They're not supposed to be connecting with each other. And so he asks her for a drink, and they're talking, and he's kind of explaining who he is. He's Jesus. He has this living water. And then he says, hey, go back to your house, get your husband. I want to talk to him too. And she says, I don't have a husband. And Jesus says, I know. And the man you're with now is not your husband. And then she does something interesting. She just asks a question that doesn't have anything to do with that conversation. She says, oh, that mountain over there, are we supposed to worship on that mountain or this mountain over here? And she uses a question to avoid a fairly deep, intense conversation. That's a risk of asking questions. When I was new to youth ministry, oh, probably 8 years ago or so, we had a student that was notorious for this. We would be in a conversation, we'd be talking about something, it would be starting to get real, we'd be answering good questions, asking good questions. All of a sudden, his hand would shoot up and he'd say, what does the Bible say about smoking weed? And we'd be like, oh man, here we go again. He would use those questions to just totally derail a deep subject. So that's a risk we have to be careful of. I mean, we see this every day, and if we're talking at the lunch table or at the water cooler or wherever, and it gets, like, political and starts to get awkward, somebody usually says, how about them Chiefs? Or how about the weather? Or how about whatever? They just kind of like, let's get away from that. So be careful how we use questions. So my encouragement this week is twofold. My encouragement is that we process what questions we're asking. Are they good questions? Are we asking good questions? And my second encouragement is to answer questions well this week. When somebody asks you a question, how do we answer? As a parent, this past week, I've been much, much more aware of how I'm answering my kids' questions because I have more life experience than them. So if my son asks a question that has a simple answer, like why do we have speed limits? Like, I could say, because it's safer, and that's a right answer. If I answer that, it's just over, his mind doesn't learn anything new. But if he says, why do we have speed limits? And I say, like, well, what do you think? Like, what would happen if we went faster? If I answer the question that way, it trains his brain to be imaginative. So think about how we ask questions, asking good questions, and how do we answer questions. The band can come on up. That's all I have for this morning. But I'd like to close with a prayer, and then we'll do a little bit more worship. God, thank you for this morning. Thanks for your example of asking lots and lots of questions. God, help us to be like you. Help us to be inquisitive, to invite relationship and new life into our community. Amen.